Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. You know, I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
It's late Thursday, March 16th. A very happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you listening on Friday the 17th. Hope you get after it in whichever way makes you happy this weekend, this Friday. That's pretty exciting. We've got a lot of, I'm not going to say exciting players to talk about on the podcast today. We have a lot of what I would call Maybe not fantasy relevant players, but fantasy adjacent players to talk about on this podcast here today. But what is very exciting, joining me to recap the last couple of days of free agency, is the great Dwayne McFarland from Fantasy Life. Dwayne, what's going on, buddy?
Man, super excited to be on. I don't know how many folks will keep listening after our open, you know? They could be gone. They might already be gone. They might not even hear right now. But no, dude, I'm always happy to come join you and just get to talk football. Like, look, we get to do this for a living. It's like, come on, like, pinch me. I'll wear green tomorrow, though. I'll wear green tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's we're on fire here. I don't know what you're talking about, but this open is going extremely well with some of the stuff here. But man, before we talk about the news, which is all we're going to talk about today, Dwayne, you guys at Fantasy Life made a big move this week. They reunited you and Ian Hartitz over there. You guys are kind of building a damn powerhouse over there at Fantasy Life. Tell the people who are just hearing of you for the first time somehow, hearing about Fantasy Life somehow for the first time. Tell me. About what's going on over there, because it seems pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a lot of folks probably know who this guy named Matthew Berry is. So this is Matthew Berry Fantasy Life. The biggest part of what we do, we've got a newsletter. Got over 500,000 subscribers. Over half the people open our newsletter. When I first came to the company, I was like, that can't be right. I used to work in product management.
Incredible.
That's a nutty, yeah, that is a nutty, nutty, nutty stat. Like, if you're a stat nerd, like, that's a really nutty stat. So Matthew is the leader of it. But then, like, as far as our content creators, you mentioned it, like, we're really creating, I love the team I'm on. We've got myself, Peter Overzet. We've got Ian Hartitz. We've got Kendall Valenzuela. We've got Chris Allen. I mean, we've got a ton of other great contributors. Some of you've probably heard of Cooter Doodle. If you haven't, check her out on Twitter. She's hilarious. And I could go on and on. Like, it's a really great team. And yeah, we're just looking, we're working to expand, man. We're working on new data tools. We're working on, articles. We're working on our rookie stuff. You know, you earlier today, we had a little talk about, you know, Jaxon Smith and Jigba a little bit on Twitter earlier today. So, you know, it's that time of year, getting ready for the draft. Got a lot of content and free agency. Of course, we got the free agency tracker up, but everybody can check it out over at fantasylife.com and just sign up for the newsletter. It's free.
I did a little work with the newsletter last year, put some perception stuff in the newsletter, a little partnership there. And well, yeah, when I heard that like half the people open the newsletter and people out there that aren't familiar with newsletters. And I mean, I don't know how you could not be familiar with newsletters. You're probably getting a bunch bombarding your email box right now. The fact that half the damn people open that thing, that's incredible. That's a wild stat. But Dwayne, yeah, you guys are doing great stuff over there. I just want the people to be familiar because there's like that's kind of a who's like on the come up in the fantasy game right now, in my opinion. So I'm excited to see everybody get opportunities over there. And as you mentioned, we get the opportunity to do this for a living. It's an extremely fun time in the NFL, man. So let's get right into it here. A lot of stuff has happened even since we just recorded our last episode on Tuesday evening with John Daigle, starting with Aaron Rodgers appeared on Pat McAfee. And he said, quote, first of all, Dwayne, Did you watch the entire Pat McAfee Aaron Rodgers thing? Did you watch part
no,
of it,
or I didn't need to. I was getting a live feed on Twitter of every national reporter telling me everything that was happening, and so if I missed something, you can let me know. I figured it was all covered within that. I'll let you run with this.
If you missed anything, it probably isn't important to the grand scheme of things or our listeners here. Like you said, people probably have heard about all of the relevant points at this stage of the game. I will say this. I do find it hilarious how, and I think I'm going to shout out Evan Silva here because he quote tweeted Pro Football Talk saying like, Aaron Rodgers is living rent-free in the media's head. And Evan points out, as the entire media, like, yes, live tweets.
That was a great tweet.
Yeah, like, he's like, they're all hate tweeting through Aaron Rodgers on Pat McAfee. It's like 500,000 people are concurrent. That might be an even crazier stat than the newsletter stat, is that 500,000 people are watching a live stream on YouTube of McAfee and the boys going back and forth with Aaron Rodgers. Anyways, for our purposes, the main takeaway here is that Rodgers said, quote, "It is my intention to play for the New York Jets." And it has been his intention to play for the New York Jets since basically last Friday. I think Aaron Rodgers wanted to accomplish a lot of things by going on his usual stint on McAfee. But the biggest thing that I think he wanted to get out there was that he is not the holdup here. The holdup is that Green Bay and New York are going back and forth and trying to figure out the compensation, basically, which I do think is complicated, Dwayne. And if you want to weigh in on what you think about the compensation, we can definitely do that. But for our purposes on this show today, we are going to fully break this thing down right now as if it has actually happened, because it is going to happen at some point. And when we get there, we'll react to anything else, like, you know, a player incoming in the trade back to Green Bay, anything like that, when and if it happens. But for right now, Dwayne, Aaron Rodgers, New York Jets, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think number one, like, we just start with Aaron Rodgers, and I don't think that he's washed. I know that there's probably a segment, right? I don't want to say everyone. There's definitely a segment of the community out there. When I say community, fantasy, or just NFL people that think that he might be washed. And I think when you just really look at some of the advanced stuff around him, so like one thing that I always look at, like the very best quarterbacks in the league, like, are really great at creating plays outside of structure and within structure. So Rodgers has been really good from the pocket, but where you differentiate is whenever the play breaks down. And when we've seen him in that situation over the last 3 years, he's still been really good. He has 14 touchdown passes over the last three seasons. Mahomes and Josh Allen are the only two above him whenever you're in a scramble drill or when the play is breaking down. They each have 18 passing touchdowns. So when you look at him, like, he can still make all the throws. Like, even if you just even if you don't look at a stat, you just watch him throw the ball. Like, and you saw it at the end of last year with Christian Watson. You saw him uncorking it.
Yeah.
You know, you saw him beat double coverage with Christian Watson. He can still make all the throws. I think you just got to make sure his head's in the game. I think the big question, and this is where you are the receiver expert, is like, is this receiving core really an upgrade? And I know kind of the funny part is apparently he wants to bring his whole receiving core, which wasn't very good, except for Christian Watson last year. Yeah. So we're going to have Alan Lazard, apparently, and Randall Cobb and Mercedes Lewis are all going to somehow be part of this deal. But I think that's the big question. That's what Ian and I were debating on our pod yesterday. It was like, you know, but is it really? We love Garrett Wilson. Like, Garrett Wilson's amazing. We have no doubt about him. But outside of that, like, does he really have two or three playmakers? I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts.
I think it's a pretty substantial upgrade, even with Lazard coming over. And we talked about this with Daigle on the last episode. I think that Lazard is just a perfect replacement for Corey Davis, basically. I think Davis eventually will either get cut or he'll be traded. And Davis is a really good blocker. He's not really a separator, but he can kind of win with size and tight spaces. Alan Lazard, not a separator, great blocker, can win with size and tight spaces. So basically, like, I think that's kind of a wash. Again, I think Davis is probably not on the roster. The Randall Cobb thing, obviously, that's a little weird. Let's just pretend Randall Cobb's not a part of the mix for right now. Just the guys that are currently on the roster.
Please tell me Elijah Moore can make a comeback. This is what I need to hear, Matt.
Right. This is the main thing here, because on Garrett Wilson, I mean, Wilson had a great rookie year. His reception perception profile will be up here in a matter of days, really, because I'm going to get that thing up there. And great, great player. He's a weird player, Dwayne, because he's a fantastic separator. And his fundamentals aren't even like tight all the way yet. There are some things that he can actually do from a technical standpoint to take that next step. But he was still a guy who was already dominant against man coverage, dominant against press coverage. Like, I think he and Aaron Rodgers, the thing that was missing last year to me with Rodgers was some of those like quick hitting inbreakers that Davante Adams was so great on, which, by the way, I think will be great with Jimmy G in Las Vegas. That can be a big thing for Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, like those quick hitting in breakers, because Garrett Wilson's so dangerous after the catch. I think that would be a great marriage. You know, it's always weird saying it's going to be a great marriage with Aaron Rodgers because he's such a weird guy, especially with receivers and timing and stuff. But theoretically, that should be a great marriage. The Elijah Moore thing, man, is tough because I don't know what you thought about him. I don't know what you think about him as a player. I don't know what you thought about him as a player after his rookie year. I thought his rookie year was awesome. His second year is just so weird, Dwayne. And I think that when guys like get in fights especially as publicly as Elijah Moore does with the team, you kind of have to reset expectations all the way back at the bottom, basically, similar to a guy like Brandon Ayuk. And again, another guy that I thought was awesome in his rookie year and finally got back around to. I don't know why I'm on this pattern with second year
receivers.
But he did
get out. He did manage his way out of the doghouse. So there's a chance.
Exactly. And Elijah Moore kind of got back into the good graces as the year went on. And I think on film, man, this is the tough part about it, is because even in his second year, he's still a great route runner. He is still a guy that can beat press man coverage. And, you know, whether they want to use him in the slot, whether they want to use him as an X receiver, I think that's kind of less likely just because of his size. But I think there's a lot of ways that these guys can go from a position versatility standpoint. And I think that's probably the biggest question, is like, who's going to line up in two receiver sets? Who's going to be like a slot only player, if there is a slot only player? Because Garrett Wilson can play in the slot. He told me at the Super Bowl he loves to play in the slot. Lazard could be a big slot receiver. Elijah Moore can obviously be a slot receiver. So I'm saying a lot of things here, Dwayne, to say that I'm having a tough time projecting from a fantasy sense, but just from a talent sense, I'm still very much in on Elijah Moore bouncing back as a player.
Yeah, I am as well. And part of it just comes down to cost. Like, enough people are still out on Elijah Moore that his ADP isn't nuts. And I think, you know, we could easily see wide receiver three upside, like as a way to think about him. And you can draft him as a wide receiver four, because really he could have wide receiver two upside. Like,
yeah, I agree.
I mean, in the perfect scenario, like the NFL season, you know, is, you know, it's chaos. If something else happens, you know, we don't want anybody else to get hurt or injured. But if all of a sudden he finds himself on the field all the time with Aaron Rodgers, like, he's going to have some wide receiver one weeks if he can get his head on straight, and as long as, you know, he can smooth things over with the coaches. But I'm with you. Scott Barrett actually put out a really good tweet today, just like showing every time that, you know, Zach Wilson was dropping back to pass and actually either Elijah Moore was wide open or got missed. And you guys should go check it out. It's kind of along the lines of what you were just talking about. Like, he was still playing well. And you've mentioned this about other things, like a really bad quarterback play can drag down a lot of these stats, even that we look at yards per route run. Like, targets per route run should technically still be there. You earn the target, but, you know, he didn't hit you. But sometimes the scheme can take you away from it. Or, you know, sometimes we just have quarterbacks and wide receivers that don't click for whatever reason, and they do click with others. But yeah, I think Elijah Moore is the key to this all of a sudden being an upgrade. Because like you said, Lazard's really kind of a wash. I think we both like Garrett Wilson over, you know, Christian Watson. They're two very different players. Watson did some nice things last year, but I think, you know, Garrett Wilson does have a chance to be a dominant all around wide receiver with Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, he's wide receiver 10 off the board right now over on in big board drafts over on Underdog. And he's been there. So I at least feel comfortable drafting him as wide receiver 10. Like, before, when I was kind of like, well, there's still a chance I have Zach Wilson under center, like, that really scared me. And I felt like, wow, we're probably really pricing in everything on Wilson. I think he's up to wide receiver 9 now. So any thoughts on that?
Pretty spicy, because I do think this could be a bit of a spread out target tree. If Elijah Moore is the guy that I think we think he can bounce back into. And just one more point on that, too. Like, again, when these guys like get into these beefs with teams, and basically it sounds like it was mostly with Mike LaFleur, who's no longer in the mix here, which, you know, maybe Elijah Moore and Aaron Rodgers can bond over their complications with the LaFleur family. You know, maybe that can be like their complicated relationship there. Maybe that could be their first bonding moment. That would be nice. I'd love that Roto World blurb, by the way. But, you know, you got, again, setting expectations back to zero. Like, you could still be out there doing your job, but you're just not even in like the thought of the quarterback or the coordinator because you haven't been a part of the game plan for a while. So I don't know, like I said, I think Moore is the key here, because if he does bounce back into like being a legit NFL number two wide receiver, which I think he can be, then, you know, what is Garrett Wilson's target total like? Is, because I think Alan Lazard's still going to have a big role on this team, even if it's not very fantasy relevant, because Rodgers loves him and he can be good in the red zone. So I don't know, this Jets situation is going to be really complicated, and like a wide receiver 10, wide receiver 9 with Garrett Wilson, I think he absolutely like has that upside because he's that good of a player. But it's going to kind of come down to me as like who's around him basically in that range.
Yeah, I agree. I think you could see something where, you know, it's Garrett Wilson, 23%, 24% of the targets. You could have Elijah Moore, 21, 22. And you could still have room for Lazard to be like that 17, 18% guy, right? And get the targets down inside the 10-yard line, that kind of thing you're talking about. But I think the other question is, how much 11 personnel are they really going to run? Because they like to run the two tight ends. They've got Uzomah and Conklin. They like to, you know, they've talked about using a fullback more. So it'll be interesting, you know, to see what they do. But if you look at Nathaniel Hackett, number one, we don't know how he still has a job in the NFL, but he does. And
yes, we do for this very scenario.
Yes, for this. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Good point. Good point. Yeah, well played. But, you know, that's the kind of offense they ran in Green Bay. So, I mean, it's you have games where, you know, your slot receiver's only out there 50% of the time. So that's going to be another variable. To your point, who's my guess is Lazard's going to be out there in two wide sets because they want him to block. And when you're out there in the two wide sets, you're more likely to run anyway. So my thought is one of the other two are going to have to play the slot more.
Yep, I think so. And it's, again, it's just going to be the key, like figuring that out in the offseason and training camp. And just, again, I know the Rodgers thing can be kind of exhausting for people, but tracking how he feels and how he talks about Wilson, about Elijah Moore is going to be key so that we don't have like Alan Lazard with that 21 target percent share, or we have, you know, Randall Cobb at 12% when he inevitably gets on this roster or whatever. So a lot of things to figure out with the Jets. Before we move on off this, I'm just curious from like a real football perspective, how do you see the AFC East playing out at this point? Rodgers with the Jets, the Dolphins are kind of loading up, the Bills are the Bills, and the Patriots, who we'll talk about here in just a second, they're a strange mystery. So rank the four AFC East teams for me.
Yeah, I think you still have to go with the Bills number one, just because it is Josh Allen, and that's the most important position as a quarterback. But right now, with Aaron Rodgers, I would go with the Jets at two. I think they're a complete team. The question for the Dolphins, like, we know that they can come out and play, you know, they hold a high standard, like, to what they want their offense to look like. Jalen Ramsey's definitely going to help on the defense, but we still have the question, right? Can Tua stay healthy? I like what they did with Mike White, especially for fantasy players, at least right now. If for some reason Tua, we knock on wood that he doesn't get hurt or anything, but if he misses four or five games, you can still survive. Tyreek Hill can survive with Mike White. You know, Tyreek Hill says that you or I can throw to him and he could be good. So he's not lacking for confidence in that area. But I think Rodgers would move the Jets past, you know, the Dolphins for me. But those are all three really good teams. Like, the AFC East is going to be so fun to watch. And the Patriots, man, they're screwed.
Yeah, well, it is what it is, man.
Hey, they've had it long enough, man. They've had it long enough.
100%. It is time to share the wealth here a little more in the AFC East. I'm with you that I think Rodgers and this, I think these offensive skill position players and, you know, some of the guys are going to get back on the offensive line makes that offense and that scoring unit good enough to vault them to number two. And I think it'll be competitive. Like, the Bills do have some work to do still. I'd love them to get a real, like, a legit running back. I'd love for them to get a legit number two. Yep. Yeah. I'd love for them to get a legit number two receiver. The Deontay Hardy, or I can't, you know what, he's changed his name all the time, but
was Harris, now Hardy. Yeah.
that's an interesting one. That's an interesting signing, but they need a legit, like, number two receiver. So they've got some work to do for sure. Although the Jets, obviously their defense can, but we know defense is tough to repeat year over year. So the AFC is going to be our AFC West from last year, where we talk about it so much, and the Bills are just going to run away with the thing like the Chiefs did last year. That's about how it's going to go. All right. You mentioned the screwed New England Patriots. They made a couple of moves here. The biggest one is they signed Juju Smith-Schuster to a three-year, $33 million deal, apparently just straight up choosing him over Jacoby Myers. They also signed James Robinson to a two-year deal that's up to $8 million. Dwayne, I think that up to is probably doing a lot of work in that contract there. I think that's probably got to be pretty heavily incentives-based. But Juju, also, his deal is kind of like more like $25 million, and he can get up to $33 million in incentives. But what was your reaction to the Juju signing? Where do you stand between like him and Jacoby Myers? Like, who's the better player? Because I think the Patriots are pretty much telling us that, you know, we didn't offer Jacoby Myers. I know they did not offer him anything close to this, and they just kind of preferred Juju, I guess, which Jacoby Myers himself said, cold world.
Yeah, I kind of think it's weird, to be honest. These are NFL coaches, so they obviously know things that we don't, right? And they have scouts that watch football in a way that we don't. I like to watch football. I don't consider myself an NFL scout. You know, I like to, you know, really study the players. You do a great job of it, so love to hear your thoughts here as well. But I also study the data, and I felt like with where Jacoby Myers is in his career, like, he had some underlying wide receiver two traits, like his, you know, his targets per route run, his target shares, You know, in games played, if you just looked at, you know, his ability, he's not like a great after the catch player, not a deep threat, but, you know, consistently open. And I was really hoping like he could land somewhere where he would play in a high volume passing attack, get to play inside in the slot. And I just feel like there's some more unknown upside really with Jacoby at this point versus what we see with Juju, who really has been in a downward spiral, you know, since his breakout in year two. Just hasn't really been able to get back to that spot that we saw him at. Like, he had a nice year in year four. You know, he had he had a good season that year. But overall, like, Juju went to the Chiefs, who really didn't have anyone besides Travis Kelce when we really break it down. Like, MVS didn't step forward. Sky Moore couldn't get things going as a rookie. You had Justin Watson out there having to run routes. Kadarius Toney was in a very limited role. And Juju still just couldn't really make noise. And I think that's concerning to me. So I look at him as really like a wide receiver four kind of profile. Like the you're hoping he plays as he's a wide receiver three. But now when you put him in the Patriots offense, it's like, eh. And plus, like, really, what does it mean? Like, when the Patriots like you as a wide receiver, like, it's not like that's right. A really good track record other than drafting a guy that's a quarterback and turning him into a slot receiver. Right. It's like, so I don't know. I have concerns about Juju. I'm not interested in him in fantasy. I mean, I think I'm going to struggle to have him inside like my top. I don't think he'll make my top 40 wide receivers right now. Probably like low 40s.
Yeah, you mentioned it. New England Patriots, not a great track record with wide receivers. They're a little bit better in, well, not recently, but I guess in their long history, they've been a little bit better in the veteran game than the rookie game, where they're an outright disaster. But pretty much everybody they brought in over the last 4 years has been outplayed by Jacoby Myers because he's just straight up better than them, despite being a UDFA. And I think he's better than Juju Smith-Schuster. Like yeah. You mentioned, like, some of their metrics are similar, like just from a reception perception standpoint. Juju's at 82.5% success rate versus zone coverage last year, which is really, really good and has always been the strength of his game. Jacoby Myers is like 80.1%. So that's kind of a wash. Like, that from a percentile standpoint, that's pretty close. But then when you look at like man coverage and press coverage, which Juju's always been weak at, you know, he's like 54.7%. Jacoby Myers up at 70.6%. Like, I agree that he has more upside, more room to grow, and I think is a better Z receiver, a flanker receiver, than Juju is, who's more of just a pure big slot. And like the 2018 season for Juju, I've said this in a couple places, but that's like the biggest evidence point to me that wide receiver stats are fake news, because he's basically been the exact same player the entire course of his career, with maybe a little bit more juice after the catch early in his career as he is during that season. Like, nothing has really changed about him fundamentally as a player. His conditions have just changed, and I don't think these conditions are very good either. You know, I think he brings some different elements to the table, like toughness, contested catchability, than Jacoby Myers does. But it's a weird kind of move to just get rid of the guy, you know, and especially for a team in the Patriots who all they do is like hire guys they know, bring in coaches they know and stuff like that. Bill O'Brien, great example. So very weird to me, but I think, they can't possibly be done with their receiver core, Dwayne. They still desperately need an X receiver and somebody with a little more juice on the outside.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're not done, but it is interesting. They move on from Jonnu Smith as well. Maybe they're going to play more 11. You know, this year, maybe they're going to play more three wide receiver sets. The Patriots are one of these teams that kind of morph every week. Like, oh, look at this. They ran 11. No, then the next week they'll run like all this 12 personnel stuff. And it's not always game script dependent. So they're kind of maddening to try to figure out, you know, on a week to week basis. Mostly I just get to usually after about 4 weeks, I'm just done with the Patriots and the receiving core. I'm like, I'm just not going to, there's no point. Like, what am I studying? It's just going to change the next week. But yeah, I think they've still got a lot of work to do. You know, Juju, in an optimal situation, Juju's like your wide receiver three on your team.
Yeah.
You know, he can get by as your wide receiver two, but you would need a really strong one in that scenario, in my opinion, especially if you're looking to make noise in this division that's stacked the way that the AFC East is.
I think like his stats last year, probably, and maybe a little more touchdowns, I don't know, because he was so lacking in that column, but I feel like his stats last year are probably like a best case scenario for him this year. And, you know, that's pretty concerning if he's your wide receiver too. If you can't make it happen with Patrick Mahomes, it's probably as simple as just being like, yeah, you're probably, this is your career ceiling at this point. You mentioned like the fact that they're probably not done. We talked about that. Reportedly, they're in the trade mix for DeAndre Hopkins or Jerry Jeudy. I still think the DeAndre Hopkins thing is unlikely, just because Bill O'Brien is the Patriots offensive coordinator, and that relationship didn't end well. But I guess the Jeudy thing is relatively interesting. You and I were talking about this before we got going here. I know you've got some thoughts about Judy and this potential. Like, I know Jeff Howe has said that it might take a first round pick or an early second round pick for the Broncos to part with Jerry Jeudy. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that part is interesting because I don't know if a team's going to give up a one. Like, I know the Cowboys, you know, have definitely, like, they've come to the Broncos about Jeudy like a couple of times over the course of the last year. You know, there's also rumors that people have been on, you know, asking about Cortland Sutton. So it's evident like that Sean Payton's willing to clean house, wants to change a lot of things from where they were. But with Jeudy, like, I don't know, man, if you can trade a first round pick. And I think the Broncos are kind of crazy. I don't know that they're crazy to be asking it because the underlying data points, like, I actually really like. Like, Jerry Judy's played through some injuries, has been hurt. I get it. The first year, everybody wrote him off because he dropped a lot of balls, but drops are not a sticky stat. And still a player, like, and you can jump in here, but, like, to me, when I watch him, like, he can get open. Tracking, using some of the PFF stuff, you know, looking at, you know, his open rate, it was pretty good. But he demands targets. I mean, targets per route run, which is a stat. Unfortunately, you have to use this stat with Judy because he's always hurt. You can't just go to a straight target share. You got to go to targets per route run. So that's kind of a part of it, of what you're dealing with. But 21%, 21%, and 22%. Like, that can be a high-end wide receiver too. If you look at the last, you know, 10 years of fantasy data and you map that back to, you know, fantasy finishes, that's in the range of what, you know, a mid-range to high-end wide receiver two can look like. So fantasy-wise, like, I still have hopes for Jeudy. And honestly, he was the lone bright spot I saw with Russell Wilson. Like, he was kind of playing the Tyler Lockett role. I don't know if that's the perfect role to have him in, but he was the one running the deep crossers, all those sort of routes. And at the end of the year, he and Wilson did kind of get on track. He had that nice game against Kansas City. I thought we were seeing some positive things, but if it's like, if Sean Payton's out on it, like, I don't know, like, that could be a bad thing for Jeudy to be, still be stuck in Denver. I definitely think he's worth looking at. I just think it's kind of weird that the Broncos think they can get a one after he really hasn't been able to stay healthy. Like, a fantasy nerd like me, I like him. I like Jerry Jeudy. I want to see him on a team where he can be a wide receiver one or wide receiver two, because I think he could give you fantasy production. He just needs to stay healthy all year.
Yeah, I think it would be crazy to trade a first round pick for Jerry Jeudy. But the Cortland Sutton thing, by the way, like, I mean, just keep your, if it's a third, or just keep your third, try to take a receiver that might be as good as Cortland Sutton. I'm not the biggest Sutton fan in the world. I was out on the entire Denver offense last year because I thought these guys were both pretty overrated. Jerry Jeudy, though, you know, you bring up like this, he gets open, and I agree. Like, he's a pretty good, I think he's a little overrated as a route runner, but he's still pretty good. He's more of like kind of an inconsistent, splashy, big play threat as a route runner, which I think matches up to kind of how he produced last year as well. Like, I think that deep crosser stuff is some of his best work. Again, another player that, like, he got to tight, like, not like in Garrett Wilson's sense, because he's better than Garrett Wilson, but you got to just tighten up those fundamentals. And I think Jerry Jeudy would really take it another step there. So I tweeted about this, and I got a lot of pushback from people that were very pro Jerry Jeudy, that I probably wouldn't trade a second round pick for him. But if some team wanted to trade a second, I think that would be fine. Again, I think he's just a tough player to track because he's been so inconsistent and he did play through injury in his entire second season for the most part, the high ankle sprain. I'm willing to throw that out, but I still think he's a bit of a mercurial player. If there is a place where you could fit him, where do you think that would be best?
Oh man, I haven't thought through this, but I mean, I think he could be a solid wide receiver too, you know, on a lot of teams. I agree with you. Like, the inconsistency, you might not be getting a wide receiver one. So if you're not getting a wide receiver one, why would you trade, you know, a first round pick? I mean, we saw somebody get A.J. Brown, for goodness sakes, for a first round pick. Like, he's not A.J. Brown. So, like, just looking at the historical trades that we've seen in the marketplace.
Let me ask you this. The Cardinals kind of got filleted for trading a first round pick for Marquise Brown in a third. And I wouldn't have made that trade either, even though, like, they did get a third round pick. It's their 100th overall pick back. So basically, let's just call that Marquise Brown for a second. Who do you think is a better player right now, Jerry Jeudy or Marquise Brown?
Oh, I think Marquise Brown's still shown more. And I mean, same. I think you really saw it in his games where he didn't play with DeAndre Hopkins last year. I think he showed that he can be a number one. I don't know that he's, you know, an elite number one, but I think he's shown that he can definitely earn targets. He has big playability. Last year, I thought that he showed there's a little more versatility of the type of routes and different things that he can do. Now, there's not a lot of variety in like what Cliff Kingsbury offense. So, I mean, that's not really saying a ton, but they used him in a different way than the way that the Ravens offense had used him. So just being able to pair the two, you know, teams you've seen him play for together and what he did for each team, I think you've seen him do some different things. So I like Marquise Brown. I think I would grade I'm not thinking. I know I would grade Marquise Brown above Jerry Jeudy. But again, to your point, Jerry Judy's been injured a lot. And I think that is kind of the unknown factor, you know, here as to how much that's really impacted his play.
Yeah. Of course, we talk about AJ Brown. He had been injured a lot and then obviously was the big difference.
And then he wasn't.
Yeah. You know, it does happen that way sometimes. But I still think Judy's a tough player to pair. I'd rather not see either of these guys on the Patriots, though. I mean, just for God's sake.
Yeah, like, I'm with you.
Yeah, I think Hopkins would be a fun fit with the Cowboys, who we'll talk about here in just a second. And you'd connected with Jerry Jeudy there, just because, you know, if you have CeeDee Lamb like on the front side and you have, you know, Hopkins either playing as the Z or the X on the backside, I think that would be a really, really good combination for Dak Prescott. I also think they'd be a fun fit for Brandon Cooks. I think they'd be a fun fit for anybody that could step into that previous Noah Brown role. That would be great to see for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, you mean the previous Amari Cooper role?
Well, yeah. Just a little bit. That, yeah, well.
Get in there every time.
Well, speaking of bygones and speaking of the Dallas Cowboys, they parted ways with Ezekiel Elliott, who, Dwayne, I talk about this on the show sometimes. We talked about it with Eckler at different times because he's asked about it. I always talk about the life cycle of a fantasy running back. Like, what is the life cycle of a fantasy running back? I think that Zeke perfectly encapsulates what I'm talking about there. He begins his career as like the hottest thing in the world. You know, he was incredible to start his career. He was pretty awesome in real life. He was awesome in fantasy, led the NFL in rushing yards twice. And then he eventually gets into the, all right, get this guy the hell out of here. You know, like give me the younger guy behind him. Get the hell out of here. I'm ready for this next guy to take over. Well, the Cowboys obviously finally take their medicine here, and they eat the Zeke contract. And he's going to hit the open market. He basically has hit the open market. So first of all, do we think this is the end of Zeke, who, again, I just want to bring it back to, because I know he gets clowned on so much and whatever. I still think he'd be kind of a useful player, and at his peak was an unbelievable fantasy guy.
Yeah, I think what you're looking for Zeke is you want him to land on a high quality offense where he has a lot of potential to score touchdowns. Like, that's your path to upside. Like, his ability in the receiving game, it's okay. He can be a little more than a swing pass player, you know, curious to your thoughts there, but he's not somebody that works downfield that you're trying to get into your natural, like your early part of your progressions for your quarterback. It's more of a first reads covered, second reads covered. Oh crap. Like, I'll dump it off to Zeke. That's really what he is. You know, Pollard is much more polished as far as being able to work against linebackers and safeties down the field, can have a positive A dot, where Zeke's just really more of that, you know, right around the line of scrimmage kind of swing pass guy. But he can score touchdowns. Like, he's still a powerful guy. And so you can use him there. The problem is, like, what does a team want to pay for that? Because, you know, that doesn't necessarily make you special. You need to score touchdowns, and he definitely has a knack for that. But it's like, you don't have to be the greatest running back ever. And it depends on the setting, right? If you have a really good offensive line, just an average running back can score a lot of touchdowns in a good offense. So I think there's a lot of factors. What I will say with Zeke is he's always had great vision, and he still has that. And that's really handy down inside the 5-yard line, especially once you get to the goal line. He's so good at what, like, Matt Waldman calls the little micro movements, the little adjustments, just the little slight and just that shoulder lean where he can get skinny just in the right way. Like, he understands the game very well, and he's very powerful. He still has a low pad level. Injuries starting to pile up a little bit more, but, like, overall, he's just not an explosive player, right? He doesn't break off the long runs anymore. That's basically been gone for about 3 years as the injuries have started to accumulate over the last couple of seasons. That's definitely been an impact, but I could see if he landed somewhere that has a chance to score a lot of touchdowns, that doesn't have a quarterback that steals those or poaches those, then yeah, he could potentially have like some low end RB2 upside in a surprise kind of season where he scores 13, 14 touchdowns. But, you know, I think tops, you maybe get 800, 900 yards out of him. Unless he really, I don't see him landing anywhere where he's not going to have to be in some sort of committee. See, that's going to be the challenge for Zeke.
I definitely think there is this year's Jamal Williams, like, in his range.
Yeah,
of outcomes.
That's a great comp. Great comp. Yeah.
But a lot of things had to play out for Jamal Williams to have that type of season. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown had to be tackled at the, you know, 5-yard line a billion times. The coaching staff had to kind of have a, you know, lukewarm, non-committal relationship with the nominal starter in DeAndre Swift. So a lot of things had to go right. But I kind of think, like, they're similar players at this point, because Elliott is, you know, a banger back, like you mentioned, master of kind of those small movements. I think that's a great way to say what he's still good at. He's also good in pass protection. And, you know, Jamal Williams, we'll talk about him later. I think he's a little underrated as a pass protector as well. But overall, yeah, I think there's, you know, could he follow like Kellen Moore to the Chargers? I know, obviously, Eckler, the whole thing, the trade situation is kind of up in the air. But, you know, Austin's always talked about wanting like a complimentary back. There's familiarity there with Kellen Moore, and, you know, they want to use multiple backs. Maybe that would be an interesting spot. Although, my God, we just talked about like he needs to score touchdowns. We're going to put him in a backfield with like the most prolific touchdown scorer in the NFL. Theoretically, yeah. If Austin's still a member of the Chargers, that would be an interesting one. But something like that, though, where he's going to mix in with a more dynamic back, maybe Tampa Bay with Rashad White. Although I think there's probably a lot of, I don't know where you stand on Rashad White, but I know there's a lot of like Rashad White truthers that would lose their mind over that one.
Yeah. Well, and the other problem there is like the offense could really just take a huge step back, right? It was already descending with Brady, and like Brady was still able to make all the throws last year, but defenses have just figured out how to play the Bucs. They figured out how to handle that wide receiver combo. Mike Evans is getting a little bit older, not to say that he can't still ball, but he's not Mike Evans from 3 or 4 years ago. And so, I think there's a challenge there just because you've got Baker or Kyle Trask right now. Like one of those two dudes is going to have to be leading the offense. And if you're depending on touchdowns, when I hear those two quarterbacks, I'm like, geez, that could be slim pickings for touchdowns. As far as Rashad White goes, I'm kind of what I do like is, you know, his production in the receiving game. And for fantasy, you know, especially if you're playing in a PPR league, half PPR, like that's huge. So I think in fantasy, Rashad White can actually be better than what he really is in real life. Like in real life, his underlying metrics, honestly, were not that great. Explosive play rate, not great. Missed tackles forced, not great. Yards after contact, not great. Really kind of looked like an average to below average player in all those areas. Now, he flashed a little bit on film in certain areas, and he kind of got better as the season went on. So that's not to say that he can't be better this next season. Like, look, just a year ago, everybody trashed Josh Jacobs about all of his efficiency metrics. And then, you know, look what he does last year. Comes out and goes nuts. Now, he had a track record of showing that before. We don't know that about Rashad White, but those things can change really quickly. But Zeke, I don't think I would like that landing spot just because the quarterback issue. And they're going to probably face a lot of third and longs and stuff like that. And I think they're going to prefer White in that. Now, they could go. I say that. Zeke kept Pollard off the field because of what you talked about. He is a good pass protector. In third and long, you're really not looking to check it down to your running back anyway. You're trying to push it down the field, so an extra blocker can make sense.
How about Buffalo? I think Buffalo would be potentially interesting. You know, I said, they need a banger back. And again, put him on the field on third down to pass protect. Josh Allen doesn't. They want him to throw to the running back. He doesn't really want to do that anyways, right? No. He wants to scramble or he wants to whip the ball downfield. Zeke could be good at that. Banger back. I kind of think they've tweaked a lot of contracts. Like they might be aiming to get into the Eckler sweepstakes if there is a sweepstakes, or if Derrick Henry is really going to get moved. I could see them making one of those type of moves, and in addition to needing a second wide receiver. But I don't know, that one would be a spot where maybe my eyebrow would definitely be raised if he was in Buffalo.
Because you would get the high quality offense where, you know, now that touchdown upside could be there, because that's at this point, that's what you're looking for Zeke. That's his path to upside.
I'm sure Tony Pollard, the upside has already been priced in for his ADP this year, because I think everybody assumed that Zeke was not going to be in this mix. Where do you stand on Pollard this year after Zeke is officially going to be gone? And, you know, Dallas at this point doesn't really have another back necessarily on the roster to threaten him.
I love Pollard. I just want the Cowboys to get him involved in the passing game more. Like Kellen Moore, if I had one gripe against him, it was really that. But before last year, I had my doubts about Kellen Moore just because it's hard to tell if offensive coordinators are really that good when they have, you know, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Dalton Schultz, Dak Prescott, you know, even Zeke when he was still playing well. It's hard to know, right? And the Cowboys have had a good offensive line in several of those years, and everything was kind of static. Last year, I thought Kellen Moore actually proved a lot of things to me. Number one, the way he protected CeeDee Lamb, moving him all over, getting him in the slot, keeping him bunched, keeping him in motion all the time, kind of like what the Lions did with Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he showed that even with just one really good player, like he could center everything around a guy like Lamb. My issue was that he didn't find a way to get, you know, Pollard involved more. Now, that could have been coming from upstairs because Jerry was still trying to sell those Zeke jerseys. You know, he wanted to sell those till the very last second because Zeke's jerseys sell like crazy in Dallas. When you go to a Cowboys game, like 21 is all over the place. So and Zeke's good in pass protection, like we talked about. So I think there's a real path for Pollard now. I think the upside case for Pollard is he turns into an Eckler, a Kamara, one of these true dual threat guys. And I don't think he has to have 300 carries to get there. I think he can get there on 225, 235 rushing attempts, but get him his 100 targets. You know, get him 100 targets, you know, in a 17 game season, it's possible. Like, let's get that done. He's easily got top six upside, super explosive player, makes a lot of big plays. Not just a swing pass guy, can create mismatches against linebackers, safeties. You can actually use him in route combinations with receivers like CeeDee Lamb, with tight ends. Cowboys are rumored to be really into this tight end class. Also rumored to be very into running backs. So my guess is that Tony Pollard will have company in the backfield within the first three rounds of the draft.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fun one to debate there. We got a trio of backup-ish quarterbacks to talk about here, starting with Baker Mayfield, who you mentioned signs a one-year deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Oh, my God. I've talked
poor
about
Chris
this.
Poor Chris Godwin. Poor Mike Evans. It's not been good for Baker, man.
It really hasn't, especially with any wide receiver that requires you to make, like, high-level throws to the outside. So really, really sorry for Mike Evans. Although he can't read the middle of the field, Baker Mayfield, either. So yeah, I guess
DJ
sorry
Moore.
So I guess sorry to Chris Godwin. I have been saying on the show that I'm dying for like a true two-man enter, one-man leave, you know, one two-dog, one-bone type of like quarterback competition. I guess we're going to get that with Baker Mayfield and damn Kyle Trask here. Not great.
I'm rooting
news
for Kyle Trask. I at least want the unknown.
Oh, God. I mean, I've heard some people I trust with like quarterback evaluations just like really not be excited about this Kyle Trask thing. Although, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, the ideal scenario is probably Kyle Trask is good enough that we never see Baker Mayfield. But man, this is a pretty rough situation here for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who also signed Chase Edmonds. So big whoop.
I'm struggling to understand like what the Bucs are doing. Do they all realize that Tom Brady's gone or not? Like, I thought it was like time to reload and kind of like let some of the salary cap go, maybe trade away some players. They're acting like Tom Brady's still on the roster. Like, they're out signing all these people and they already had salary cap problems. So I'm not sure what's going on. I feel like they're trying to hang on when they should probably be trying to shift gears.
Now, this one is much more interesting. And I also think this could be a two-man enter, one-man leaves type of competition here between Jacoby Brissett, who signed a one-year deal for $10 million with the Washington Commanders. He'll be paired there with Eric Bieniemy versus Sam Howell. I'm very curious on your Sam Howell take because I've got some thoughts here. And I'm going to talk about it behind Dalton Del Don's back and behind my father's back, the two biggest Sam Howell fans on planet Earth. Although there's weirdly like a Sam Howell cult on Twitter, Dwayne. Like, I tweeted about Jacoby Brissett and Terry McLaurin and being like, oh man, this could be pretty exciting after what Jacoby Brissett did with Amari Cooper. And there's just some people that are, you know, Sam Howell was going to be a first round pick. You know, Sam Howell was going to be, well, he wasn't a first round pick. He was a damn fifth round pick that Washington never wanted to put on the field last year, despite having Carson Wentz and Taylor Heinicke. And I guess his game against Dallas, you probably watched it intently because you're a Cowboys fan, was just so good that it just changed everybody's mind. But I don't know. The Jacoby Brissett signing is interesting and like potentially best case scenario that Washington probably could have got this offseason.
Jacoby Brissett's going to start week one. Like, let's just call it like it is. Like, look, and that's not saying that Jacoby Brissett's great, but I owe him an apology. I've called him in the past Jacoby Brissett, you know, or smoked brisket, you know. Dad jokes. I have kids. I can say dad jokes. You don't have to laugh, though. You're not obligated. But to your point, like,
I'll give it a
Jacoby
chuckle.
Came out. He played really well last year. I mean, Amari Cooper was on his way to a career season until Deshaun Watson became the starter. You know, you get Jacoby into a timing kind of offense. You give him a wide receiver like Terry McLaurin to throw to. Maybe there's a chance here. You know, again, like, I'd rather see an upgrade, a bigger upgrade to the position. But Brissett at least showed us that he could support Amari last year. And honestly, when Njoku was healthy, those two were both kind of vibing. You know, and that was in a kind of a a pass balanced. If we're going to the Madden playbooks, the old Madden playbooks, this it's either balance or you'd be picking pass balance, right? It's not pass heavy, not run heavy, somewhere in the middle, especially in today's game. But like, I think Brissett can operate, you know, in that kind of offense. I think he showed us that last year. And so I think it's positive, at least for Terry McLaurin. We'll see what happens with Jahan Dotson, you know, Curtis Samuel, some of the other guys. I don't know that Brissett's a guy that I want to have, you know, hopes that he's going to support three high-end fantasy assets, but I think he could support one really high-end fantasy asset and another decent one, you know, if based on what we saw last year.
Yeah, no, I like the Jacoby Brissett signing, man. I think he played so well last year within the confines. Like, he's just the ultimate keep the guy on the keep the train on the tracks guy at this point. And I mean, Taylor Heinicke, you know, ODU's finest. I like the way he plays, but he plays more like a in total chaos, and somehow it ends up kind of working out. Like, Terry's never, and Carson Wentz, I don't even know what's going on there. So Terry's really never had a guy who plays really well within the timing and rhythm of the offense. And I trust Bieniemy coming off that tree to design a well-designed offense there. So, you know, although obviously he's unproven as a non-Andy Reid play caller and the whole thing. I like Washington's talent too. So yeah, to me, I think this is for a Washington adjusted standard, because since they're not a serious and real operation,
Washington adjusted standard.
This is
that's awesome.
This is
a real metric.
Yes, this is a real metric. You know, somebody that grew up around the DC area as a kid. So I've had you talk about Cowboys. I used to see a lot of Jason Campbell dumping the ball off to Mike Sellers, the fullback. You know, who's like 270 pounds. So
Auburn. Yeah, yep.
That was my football come up experience. I don't even know how I like this sport and like cover it professionally. That's what I watched going up. One last thing, by the way, Dwayne, you talked about the brisket Brissett joke. You know, around the NFL, I think they might have even been around the league at this point. When I first got to around the NFL Network, they had a whole thing about calling him Jake Brisket back in the day, and you know, sliced me off a piece of that Jake Brisket. So not just a dad joke. That became like a heater back there at the NFL Network and across their rabid fan base. So yeah, you're certified funny on that one. So I like it. Jacoby Brissett.
So good.
There we go. That is always a good way to say it. Speaking of quarterbacks here, I mean, this is a little bit different deal to me, but Gardner Minshew goes to the Colts 1 year, $3.5 million, very low for Gardner Minshew, who follows Shane Steichen to the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are another team that I can't quite figure out at this point what they're going to do at the quarterback position, but it's not going to be Gardner Minshew. This isn't even like great backup money. This is like, we hope you don't ever see the field backup money.
Which is kind of weird. I think Minshew's been fine when he's been asked to come in, you know, and he's played for stints where he's been okay without being surrounded with a very good cast. Like, I'll be honest, like, I'd rather take a shot on Minshew than Mayfield at this point. Yeah. Like, I've seen Mayfield on the field enough. Right. With Gardner, it's kind of like, maybe if I put him out there with like three good receivers, maybe something can happen. Like, I mean, I've already seen Baker Mayfield in that scenario, like, and it didn't work out. So, and that's not me saying that Gardner Minshew is going to be great, but, you know, from a fantasy perspective, what's nice is you're right. They're going for a quarterback in the draft. So it's not going to matter. But what he kind of gives you, you know, if you're like a Michael Pittman person, you know, or maybe you're still hanging on to the Alec Pierce hope. It's always nice when you have a backup that, you know, can come in and cover two or three games for you, because a lot of teams don't have that, and it gets the drop off is huge, and everything, you know, really gets screwed up when the starter gets hurt. So Minshew is at least capable of giving you a little bit of buffer if he needs to come in and play for two or three games if you've got one of the receivers.
Yeah, I am a big Michael Pittman person, and I never really got caught up in the Gardner Minshew, the Minshew mania thing, but I certainly think he could throw 10 to 12 crossers at Michael Pittman if he ever got in a game. So I'm fine with that. That's good enough for me. Carolina Panthers keep making moves. They made a series of them here. So we'll just go down the line. Miles Sanders, 4-year deal, pretty decent money. He was the best backup. He was the best running back available on free agency. And he made just a little over $6 million per year money. This will tie him, I think, to Carolina for at least the next two seasons. He is reunited with Deuce Staley, who was his running back coach in Philadelphia early in his career. And we know that the Panthers had a gaping hole at running back. They still have a gaping hole at wide receiver. So they're going to bring in DJ Chark for a visit on Friday. Okay. Hayden Hurst, he's there on a 3-year deal, $21 million. I like that one because, again, another gaping hole. They had nobody at the tight end position. So Sanders, Hurst, officially there. DJ Chark visiting the team on Friday. The Panthers are going to be surrounding with, fingers crossed, CJ Stroud, some talent here.
Look, I like Sanders. He's fine. I don't think he's a great running back, but he does some things really well. Like, he's got that explosiveness that you look for. He can give you the big play. So, I mean, it was nice to see him come out last year and get like the over 1,200 yards rushing and 11 touchdowns. The 11 touchdowns were great, right? Because it's just one of those things where the year before you don't score and everybody's just down on you. It's just like, it's what Deontay Johnson's going to be like next year. Not saying he's going to score 11 touchdowns. He's not going to score zero, right?
Yes.
So it was nice to see that with Miles Sanders, but he can break the long run for you. My question on Sanders is, since his rookie season, we just haven't seen him work in the receiving game. You know, he had a nice rookie season, but since then has like really fallen off, has not scored well with PFF grades, yards per route run, targets per route run, if I could talk, all really in the bottom ranks, like as far as running backs with enough routes to qualify. So a minimum of 150 is what I look at running backs, and just not really good in any of those areas for multiple seasons now. So, I mean, maybe we see what we saw as a rookie, but he feels more of like an early down back. And like, we could still see Chuba Hubbard or something like that in the passing game. Panthers could still draft someone as well. I thought it was kind of interesting. I thought Deonta Foreman played really well last year when they gave him a chance and they didn't want to mess with him and they went with Miles Sanders.
Some people around the team do think they might still bring Foreman back in, like on a,
and that could be a good duo. That could be a good duo. Problem being, we're going to talk about an offense that's probably not going to be very good. As much as we're like, okay, Hayden Hurst, nice signing. DJ Chark could give you a vertical element to your offense. I'm surprised DJ Chark hasn't gotten more interest elsewhere, not because he's a great receiver, just because this class was really devoid, as far as free agency goes, of any deep threats. Like, McCole Hartman's fast, but he's not a deep threat. Chark is a vertical.
Too.
Yeah, he doesn't have the size, but Chark can stretch the field vertically, and there's a lot of teams that don't have that. But maybe people are just not doing it because they're like, ah, screw it. Like, all the too high safety looks, we're just not throwing deep. I don't know what's going on. I thought Chark would have more interest because he's kind of different than the rest of the free, not because he's great, but he's different than all the other potential free agents that are available.
Yeah, he feels, I was talking about this with Josh Norris today, he feels very samey to, like, I called him the lower middle class man's Terrace Marshall, which should probably tell you what
I saw that.
I think, by the way, that's projecting upward mobility for Terrace Marshall, who I'm not a big fan of from what he's shown in the NFL so far.
Yeah,
but like, Terrace Marshall can run slant routes and he can run go routes and that's it. And DJ Chark's like not a separator at all either. I don't want two guys. I mean, this is projecting of Marshall, who they did speak positively about at the combine, but this is projecting him being even in the mix and on the field here. I don't know. I think that's like pretty, that's a little too samey for me. I don't want two guys who just can't get open on the field here for CJ Stroud. Man, that's going to be that's going
to
be a
it
big
sounds like common sense to me. two guys on the field that can't get open.
That's going to be a big adjustment going from, I got Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jackson Smith and Jigba.
It's
DJ Chark, Terrace Marshall, and I don't know, my guy Rashard Higgins, not even probably like Shy Smith or I don't know. Hopefully they're taking somebody 39th overall in this wide receiver class, which I'm not super familiar with at this point. But yeah, there's at least some folks getting the Sanders thing is interesting. Where do you think he will, just hypothetically, they bring in one other back who maybe is a little bit more of an early down back, not like a passing game specialist, although we could be looking at a full 3-way committee here. Where do you think Sanders would fall, like, in your early fantasy rankings?
You know, again, to your point, we'll kind of have to see how it shakes out. But if they don't add anyone else, I mean, you're going to have to put them in the RB2, low-end RB2 conversation. I'm worried about the quality of the offense. I do think that he could still lose the passing down work, but there's a chance they give it to him. If you're going to play in an offense like what I'm projecting Carolina to be, which is not very good this season, like, you need to have almost an every down role. At a minimum, you have to be the pass catching back, because an offense like that puts themselves behind on down and distance all the time. So, and that usually starts right after first down. Second down becomes always a passing down. So if you're going to be taken off the field in that scenario, it's going to be a real problem. So I don't think there's a 0% chance, though, that he gets more involved in the passing game again, even though he hasn't been that good, because Chuba Hubbard honestly has not been that great in it either. And the coaching staff's not going to be tied to Chuba Hubbard. So I think there's a chance Sanders could get the every down role. But I'm thinking low-end RB2 right now. If they draft someone or they add someone else that I think could challenge Sanders enough to make it a committee, well, then he's into RB3 territory.
Yeah, Carolina's going to be interesting because their defense and run game, I think, are going to be good enough to kind of be interesting this year. But yeah, it's the offense and the skill position that they're going to put around these guys. All right, couple of running backs here. Changing teams, David Montgomery signs with the Lions on a 3-year, $18 million deal, which means no more Jamal Williams with the Lions, which feels like kind of a bummer. But he goes to the Saints on a 3-year, $12 million deal. Were you surprised that the Lions opted for David Montgomery over Jamal Williams?
No, because he's younger. But I do think, yes, Jamal Williams is a tougher inside runner. David Montgomery has a tendency to want to be more of an east-west back. He's really good at forcing a lot of missed tackles. Like, the guy will force like 4 missed tackles and then get 1 yard. That's the problem. He doesn't get up the field. And that's kind of the challenge they've had with Swift at the points where they haven't liked him. Now, Swift is good enough and he's fast enough that he can overcome that, even though used to drive Deuce Staley crazy. Deuce Staley's now moved on. But that's what would drive Staley crazy, is he would make that extra cut, that extra move when he's like, dude, just hit the hole. And that was a problem. Well, you're going to get the same problem with David Montgomery. And he's not as fast as DeAndre Swift, maybe a little more powerful. Power is not really neither one of, it's not like, I don't think it's a huge factor, like as a positive in either one of their games. So I felt Jamal Williams is technically the better complement to DeAndre Swift. But what I'll say is, like, Montgomery has shown a 3-down skill set. You know, not that Jamal Williams hadn't, he had shown it actually in Green Bay as well, but Montgomery's shown it for a longer period of time. And that could be a problem for DeAndre Swift. Like, I think with Swift, it's one of these things where we as fantasy analysts, and or if you just love data, even if you're not into fantasy, you look at everything. And on paper, DeAndre Swift just looks so good. But there's something with him that coaches don't like, that rubs them the wrong way. He's not been able to stay on the field. Like, he's amazing in the passing game. Like, his targets per route run, his yards per route run, his PFF receiving grade, those things are all on par, like just below like the Kamara CMC tier, like that top elite tier. He's like just below it. But the fact that he can't, one, stay on the field due to health, and two, seems to really irritate coaches. Like, I think, you know, at this point, like, you just kind of have to call it what it is. It's not that I won't be willing to draft DeAndre Swift anymore. Let's see where his ADP ends up. Because again, NFL season starts and chaos happens. And all of a sudden you find him as the starter, Montgomery's out. I love Swift, but Montgomery's a real challenge because he can play all the downs. So it'll be interesting to see how they'd been like, okay, Swift, you get the 2-minute offense. You're going to be out there in the passing downs. And then we're just going to use Jamal Williams as the banger. I don't know that it's as clear cut now with David Montgomery. I'm not sure what they're going to do with the roles.
That, I think, is the biggest thing, is that Montgomery is a good pass protector and good receiver. You know, that's going to be complicated. I mean, at different times last year, they're using like Justin Jackson. No disrespect to Justin Jackson, but like, they're mixing him in there in like, yeah, in the three, like, man three rotation. Guys.
Yeah, Craig Reynolds.
That's going to be tough. Yeah, Craig Reynolds, Godwin, something or the other, yeah, sort of the
Igwebuiki. I don't know. I messed up. Shouldn't have even went for it.
Nah, that's why I was like Godwin something or another. So I mean, that's
you're
tough.
Smarter than me.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jamal Williams though moves to the Saints. This move I like a lot, for a couple of different reasons. One, we all think that Alvin Kamara is probably going to get suspended at some point. So that's, you know, big news there. He might have like the backfield all to himself, or at least close to all to himself there at different times. But number one, I mean, Mark Ingram is like a, you know, culture guy, right? And like, he had been a great complement to Alvin Kamara, you know, at different times in their career. I think Jamal Williams could be, even when Alvin Kamara is out there, a great compliment. And, you know, there was definitely some weirdness, Dwayne, with Alvin Kamara at times with the Saints last year. Like, they weren't really used. They were using David Johnson was running more routes at different points. Like, they weren't really using him near the goal line. Jamal Williams feels like a guy who's definitely going to come in there and mess that up even more for Alvin Kamara. So yeah, a lot of personality at the backup running back and a lot of personality at the backup quarterback position for the New Orleans Saints. So that is relatively interesting there. But Jamal Williams, I like this signing a lot for the compliment standpoint and potential injury replacement standpoint.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think from a pure football, like just X's and O's, like very good complementary back to what we, you know, what we know Alvin Kamara to be. It was really weird, like you said, last year, him not being more involved in the passing game. I have no clue. Like, I have no clue what planet you're on when you draw up a game plan that includes, we're just not going to get easy passes to Alvin Kamara. It's like little Jimmy Fallon commercial. Like, it's free money. It's like, it's free yards. Like, it's just, yeah, like, he's such a mismatch. Maybe he was injured. Who knows? Maybe he's rubbing people the wrong way inside the building. But back to kind of what we talked about a minute ago with Jamal Williams, like, people don't remember, but this is a guy that kept Aaron Jones off the field on third downs back in the day in Green Bay. They used to drive us all nuts because we were all like, Aaron Jones is a good receiving back. Like, let's get him on the field. And it was always Jamal Williams, kind of similar to the Zeke thing. But he can catch balls out of the backfield. Like, he's not a downfield threat. But if he has to play for 6 or 8 games as the primary back for the Saints, like, you're going to be ranking him inside your top 24. Like, that's pretty much a guarantee, you know. And depending on how the offense looks with Carr, Olave looks like he's really ready, you know, to be a potential star in the league. Michael Thomas, we'll see what happens. You know, looked good, then got hurt. You know, they found a way to get him back, which I never thought that was going to happen after they restructured his contract and he was owed like $31 million in March. I thought it was just setting up to be like, okay, we're done. We're moving on from Michael Thomas. So maybe the Saints could have a decent offense. And if they do, then, you know, he has the complementary value of scoring touchdowns, but he has contingency value of, you know, playing every down, like in a scenario where Alvin Kamara misses time, which to your point is almost certain to happen, just a matter of how long.
He'll be an interesting guy to rank and draft in the summer. I've always ended up drafting Jamal Williams weirdly. It worked out for my dynasty team last year.
Yeah, I drafted him a ton last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was great. We'll see if I make my way around him this year. I kind of have to wrap my head around the Saints offense. They're a weird team. Alexander Mattison re-signs with the Vikings, 2 years, $7 million. Feels like maybe the Vikings want to make this thing permanent with Alexander Mattison, how he always is a great injury fill-in with Dalvin Cook. Maybe he ends up being a long-term fill-in because I think there's kind of some frostiness there between Cook and the team. He might be on the move. You have any interest in Mattison if he's theoretically the starting back for the Vikings?
Yeah, I mean, anytime we get someone that we think is going to be the every-down player and what should still be an okay offense. Like, Kirk Cousins, I know he gets a lot of heat, but he can run a functional offense. Got an elite receiver in Justin Jefferson. TJ Hawkinson really had the best year of his career. Adam Thielen is moving on, but they could add another wide receiver in the draft. I'm not a huge KJ Osborne guy, but you know, you can have a really good offense with two good weapons. And I think with Hawkinson and with, you know, Jefferson, like, that's enough that they should be able to score plenty of touchdowns. And I think that's where Madison's big upside comes from. There's also a chance they try to get a running back a little bit more involved in the receiving game once Thielen's gone. So yeah, I do like Madison. And he's one of those guys, and honestly, like, if I had been running an NFL team, like, he's one of those guys that you kick the tires on, like, mm-hmm. for this kind of a price. You know, he's still a young guy, doesn't have a lot of, you know, tread taken off the tires yet. Like, I would rather have Alexander Mattison than Zeke. You know, I mean, I had Mattison as being a guy I would take a shot on over a lot of the guys in this free agency class.
Yeah, I like that call. I do like him going back to the Vikings if there's no Dalvin Cook. New York Giants make two moves at wide receiver. You know, everybody said, oh, they're not done at wide receiver yet. They're not done at wide receiver yet after they trade for Darren Waller. Well, they signed Paris Campbell on a 1 year, $3 million deal. And then they bring back Darius Slayton for 2 years, $12 million base salary with a max value of $16.5 million, according to Mike Garafol of the NFL Network. So that's interesting for Slayton, who I think is a pretty darn good player. Campbell, only $3 million. What was your thoughts on that one?
Man, I just have to move on from Campbell at this point because I tried.
You do.
Like, because I gave him a pass. Like, here's the thing. He didn't have a great college production profile. He had things you liked. He's from Ohio State. He played with other really good players. So that can factor into your target share and stuff, you know, in college when you're playing with other high draft picks on your team. Then he came in, he was injured, right? So I kind of gave him a little bit of pass for that. But last year, he really got to have a full-time role pretty much. And he was not able to consistently. He had a little spurt in the middle of the season, about a 4-week stretch where it was nice. And it was like, oh, is this it? Is this it? Is Paris Campbell finally doing it? And then it just all fell off. So if all the metrics that I look at and for how, you know, where he's at this point in his career arc, I'm not going to mess with Paris Campbell anymore. Like, I think he fits schematically what they like to do because you have a Wandell Robinson, right? You saw Richie James play that role last season from the slot. So I don't think it's bad to have, like, basically a backup. Right, a backup plan if Wandell Robinson were to go down again, someone you could use around the line of scrimmage. But he's just not a great target earner. You know, Slayton did play well, like, and I like him more. I don't think he'll ever be like a target hog, but he does a lot of things pretty well. So I like Slayton. I think he can be a really good wide receiver 3, like on an NFL team. an okay wide receiver too.
Yep, I feel the exact same way about Slayton, and agree with you. I was never a Paris Campbell guy, just not a good enough route runner. But I actually thought, looking at his profile last year, I actually kind of a little more intrigued with him as a vertical threat than as like a little pop gun 5 yard and try to make some people miss threat. I don't really think that's his game. That is Wandale Robinson's game, but he tore his ACL late last year. He's going to be a tough player to rank, but I think Campbell potentially gives him some speed and insurance at the slot receiver spot. They do have my guy Sterling Shepard, who I love Sterling Shepard, but you
me
know.
Too. Can we get one season? I just want one healthy season before it's over.
One time, God, one time. I ended the podcast with John Daigle doing this exact thing with Sterling Shepard, so I shouldn't do it. I can't do it for two episodes in a row. I've been doing it for like six years in a row at this point, so what? Why not two episodes in a row? Little grab bag here for you, Dwayne, before we get out. Left tackle Orlando Brown signs a big deal with the Cincinnati Bengals. I thought that was interesting. A very, very big move there. The Dolphins, on the other end of the spectrum, make a move for Braxton Berrios. Tyreek Hill tweets out Wes Welker 2.0. I'm glad that NFL players just like us are willing to make the little white slot receiver stereotypes. That's great.
Yeah, it's not just us.
Not just us. And the Bears, as we're taping this, sign Robert Tonyan, and the Seahawks sign back Drew Lock to be their backup quarterback. Remember how much we talked about Drew Lock last offseason? If there's not a better, like, wow, what a waste of time. That was it.
Yeah, we'll save Drew Lock when you have Ian Harditz on. Like, you know, he's your Drew Lock guy. He'll give you your Drew Lock quotes. I like the Orlando sicko. Brown thing for the Bengals. I like that, you know, because really Lael Collins didn't work out. They had to move on from him. And, you know, you've got a quarterback like Joe Burrow. You definitely want to invest in keeping him healthy. And it's an offense that really needs to run through the passing attack. You know, there's a chance they move on from Joe Mixon, but when you have the receivers they have, you want to be throwing more often than not. So I really like that. I actually like Braxton Berrios, like just watching him. Like, the type of slot receiver he is replaceable in the NFL, mm-hmm. right? He really is the underneath whip route kind of guy. He's super quick though. Like, he can get open on that kind of stuff if you're in the right offense, but you're dealing with Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill. Like, come on. Like, Braxton Berrios is not going to see anything. They're probably going to use him for special teams, and they run a lot of just two wide receiver sets. So he's not even going to be on the field that much. I had some interest in him. Like, if he just landed in a super pass heavy offense that runs a slot receiver out there all the time, not that I would have been super high, but kind of like you're in a 20 round draft. You got to do something with your last pick. Braxton Berrios, like that kind of thing.
You mentioned Ian and the Drew Lock thing. Dwayne, would you rather watch four quarters and overtime of like the Ian Harditz all-star team of Drew Lock, Duke Johnson, Auden Tate, Cordarrelle Patterson, and you know, I don't know who are, let's just say those guys. Drew Lock's the quarterback, to throw one of those players, or eat like Ian does for a week, like the hot dogs and the ketchup and the Gatorade Zero and all that nonsense. God. Would you rather do?
I would watch the players. I can't eat like Ian. No, there's no way. No, not at this point. Like 20 years ago, Dwayne, like I could like pull off the Ian diet. I'd much rather just watch the bad film, you know, or watch the bad game. Just let me do that.
Yeah, you and I are 100% on the same page there. I'll take I'll take Drew Lock airmail and passes to Auden Tate, 10 times a game.
You get a few medicine balls in there. You see some people take some huge hits at least. There's some entertainment.
I'm going to need some medicine if I eat like Ian for a week, I'll tell you that. All right. Some names who are available as of, 4 p.m. Pacific. Odell Beckham, Adam Thielen, DJ Chark, we mentioned. Ezekiel Elliott, we talked about. Kareem Hunt, still out there. Donta Foreman, Devin Singletary, Damian Harris, Leonard Fournette, Mike Gesicki, Dalton Schultz, and Irv Smith. Not the sexiest. Foster Moreau also still out there. Not the sexiest group of dudes, but, you know, there's still some fantasy-relevant names out there, Dwayne's. But for now, we really appreciate you doing this with us, man. This was a hell of a show. We broke down a lot of fantasy-adjacent players here in just over an hour.
Yeah, man. No, happy to come on, and I appreciate all that you do in the community. And way back in the day when I was just thinking about doing this, you were kind enough, you didn't even know me, to take a phone call from me and just talk with me a little bit about the industry. So great dude all the way around. I really appreciate you.
Man, I appreciate you. I remember having that conversation with you on the phone in the Yahoo office in one of those little conference rooms. haven't been to that building in 1,000 years at this point. So that just goes to show how long ago that was and how much you have grown since then. Shout out to you, man. You're a great person in the space. And I love what you guys are building over there at Fantasy Life. I think the fact that you and Ian are back together, that should make for a hell of a thing there. Lots of good stuff going on with Dwayne McFarland. So make sure you people out there, if you don't already, how could you not be already? Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Dwayne McFarland. And you can follow me, I guess, at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, it's always a good idea to follow at Yahoo Fantasy. They're going to be tweeting a bunch of tourney stuff that I don't understand. I don't know about you, Dwayne. This is like the worst time at Twitter for me because we're coming out of like free agency and coming into like the peak of free agency and coming into like, all right, I'm trying to get some, what are people talking about prospects, you know, because I'm watching the receivers now, I'm getting in on this. And it's just like 1,000 turning, like a bunch of people today tweeting Furman or whatever. I'm like, I don't even know what the hell we're talking about. Cause I'm not into the March Madness thing. So it's a tough time on Twitter.
Yeah, it is for me too. I like the energy though. People are having a good time, so good for them. But it dies down really quickly though. It's like this weekend when everyone's still in it. It's kind of like the first 4 weeks of fantasy. Everybody still has a chance, but it all happens in one weekend. And then all of a sudden, it's like next week the noise is cut down by 75%. So we'll be fine.
Hey, I love to watch college basketball with like you know, with a beer in my hand or something like that. But I just don't get the Twitter stuff. So there it is. All right. We got a lot going on the next couple of weeks. We will be back late Tuesday with more free agency reactions, some free agency winners with Scott Pianowski. But until then, we're out.